Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Bad Faith, a Harper Ross legal thriller, by Rachel Sinclair, narrated by Emily Sutton Smith. Chapter 1.
The body of Gina Caldwell was found and your client has been arrested. Do you have any comment?
Flashbulbs popped in my eyes, blinding me. I felt bile travel from my stomach to my throat, and I swallowed hard. I had a headache that would have blinded me if those damned flashbulbs didn't first. I didn't want to deal with this, even though I knew that I was going to have to, eventually. Ever since my former client, John Robinson, had been arrested for killing his current girlfriend and dumping her body in a ravine, I knew that this day was coming, my day of reckoning.
Yes,
I said, putting my hand over my eyes to try to shield them from any more insult from the popping flashbulbs. My client, John Robinson, has a Sixth Amendment right to counsel, same as anybody else in this country. I was simply fulfilling my constitutional duty in defending him. My statement wasn't something that I practiced in front of a mirror before leaving my house this morning. I didn't dream that there would be reporters camped outside my door. After all, I lived in a quiet neighborhood in Brookside. I had restored one of those rambling, turn-of-the-century homes that the Brookside area is so famous for when I won my first big case, and the offers and new cases came pouring in. It was always my dream to own a large, older home, and I was able to achieve this. This home became my enclave, my space where I could decompress. Now, it seemed, it was my prison. The place where the media camped out to get some kind of word from me about how I felt to, essentially, be an accessory to murder. At least, that was how it was framed by them. I was the lower-than-scum who managed to free my client on a technicality, even though I surely knew that the guy was guilty. Blood was on my hands. I didn't have time to think about what had happened to that poor girl, Gina, before the media besieged me. I was suddenly surrounded by all these people who wanted to talk to me about how it was I could get this guy off. John Robinson was a Kansas City Chiefs fullback who had been charged with brutally murdering his business partner with a baseball bat. He owned a bar downtown, and his partner was found in the back room, bludgeoned to death. I did know that he was guilty. He told me as much. But he expressed remorse, breaking down in my office as he told me about how he came to fear for his life around this guy, and how the victim, who was a known drug user, charged at him late one night with a large kitchen knife. The whole thing became he said, she said, of course, because the victim was the only person who really could tell me what had happened, and he wasn't talking anymore to me or anyone else. Still, it seemed like a pretty cut-and-dried self-defense case, and I only needed to make the jury buy his story. I also had to constantly quell my own misgivings about my client's story, which didn't really add up. My client, John, was 6 feet 6 inches and 250 pounds, while the victim, a slight Jewish man named Anthony Gold, was a foot shorter and 100 pounds lighter. John insisted to me that Anthony had a drug problem, but I could find no evidence of this. When I did my investigation, I spoke with Anthony's closest relatives and friends, all of whom described a quiet, slightly nebbish man who loved animals and never lost his temper. Not that any of this meant that Anthony didn't charge John with a kitchen knife, but it certainly did seem like Anthony wasn't the type to do such a thing, and my gut was telling me that something was off. I ignored my gut and went into the case full speed ahead, the media following the case every step of the way. It turned out that John flunked a lie detector test, which pretty much sealed it for me. I was representing a guilty man, and I was going to give him the same treatment that I gave everyone else. I was going to go balls to the wall and give him all I got. What I actually ended up getting was a mistrial. The prosecutor introduced the polygraph evidence without warning. I immediately objected because the judge had previously ruled that the polygraph evidence couldn't come in, and that was that. The jury was sent home, and the prosecutor